Hi, I'm Paul Thomas of the American Truffle Company and Mycorrhizal Systems Limited, and I'm absolutely passionate about truffles. And if you want to know more about truffles and how they grow, you can join us online at www.americantrufflecompany.com.
You're listening to iWine Radio. Welcome to Wine and Dine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo-Chamberlain.
Hi there. This is Andreas Larson.
Hi, this is John Capon.
My name is Mathur Jaffrey.
Hi, my name is Heike Platter. I'm from the Alto Adige region, or Südtirol.
Hi, my name is Paul Dolan. I am absolutely passionate about growing organic and biodynamic fruit for our wines.
Hello, my name is Lorena Garcia.
Hello, my name is Fritz Maytag.
This is Joyce Bach. I'm the author of Foodie Fight.
Hi, this is Lydia Mandavi, founder of 29 Cosmetics.
Cheers, this is Rob Barnett, CEO and founder of FinVillage.com, where wine lovers connect.
We're spending the entire hour this week talking about the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival, which is the brainchild of the American Truffle Company. The Napa Truffle Festival will be held December 10th through the 12th, and the weekend kicks off with an opening reception at the Westin Verasa and organized dinners at select Napa restaurants. Saturday includes cultivation and culinary seminars, cooking classes, a truffle orchard tour excursion, and Sunday concludes with a festival with a champagne truffle brunch, followed by an Epicurean marketplace. Joining us today for the opening segment on Wine and Dine is Dr. Paul Thomas, who is a truffle cultivation expert and scientist. He is partner and chief scientist at the American Truffle Company and managing director of Mycorrhizal Systems Limited out of United Kingdom. He's joining us today from Northern England, just north of Manchester. And Paul, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Good to speak to you.
Okay, so you worked on your PhD in cultivation of, was it mushrooms or very specifically truffles?
Actually, my PhD focused on something quite technical. It's called signaling systems within plants. And then from that, while I was still doing my PhD, I used the technology from that to develop growing truffles. So I did most of it kind of subsequent to my PhD, but then since then we've been very focused and we've published papers and we're doing our research just on truffle cultivation.
Why truffles?
It's a very good question. I think if you've never tried them, it's very hard to explain.
Yes.
But they've got an incredibly kind of intoxicating aroma, which just kind of grabs you, and that's, so from that point of view, they're really fascinating. But then when you start to look at the biology, they're just bizarre. You know, they're like science fiction. They're just very, very interesting from a scientific standpoint.
Where you grew up in just south of Manchester, you said, were there truffles? I mean, could you go out in the woods, in the forest, in the fall or whenever, and gather some truffles?
It's not. They're actually quite rare in the UK. We used to have a huge truffle industry over here, going back about 100 years. And we kind of lost that. We, through cutting down a load of our trees, which were in the right kind of areas, and that industry kind of disappeared. So now truffles are quite a rarity. So I actually never found them until I started to look into growing them, and that's what tempted me to look in at ways of growing them, because I wanted to try them and try British truffles. So that's originally what triggered me. But now we've got probably about 12 sites across the UK, wild sites where we harvest very small amounts of truffles from.
Were you ever introduced to truffles at home? Did your mother ever cook with them, or truffle oil or something? Or were you solely interested in the biology stories that would get you hooked?
Yeah, it was from two areas. One was all my life I've gone out and collected wild mushrooms.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
And all kinds of, you know, wild foods. And I had read about truffles, but I never found them. So when I was doing my PhD, I started looking to the science of where to look for them and how they grow. And that's when I just got completely hooked. And there was so much there which needed to be discovered and learned, and just fascinating things.
So there's never a boring day?
No. I think when you're, you know, passionate about something and you get to work on it every day, it's brilliant. It's a very privileged position.
Okay, tell us what kind of environment a truffle needs to grow, and there has to be a symbiotic relationship with a specific sort of oak tree, is that it?
That's exactly right. You've done some good homework here. a lot of the mushrooms which you see in the supermarkets or that people will go out and collect, they rely on decaying organic matter or dead trees, and that's what they fruit from. The truffle's a little bit different. That needs a living tree. And rather than harming the tree, it helps the tree to grow. So this is a partnership where it covers the system, root system of the tree, and it's gathering nutrients and water and helping that tree. And in turn, that tree is giving the truffle sugar and helping the truffle to grow. So it's completely symbiotic. So to grow them, you need to plant trees. And you plant oaks, and we also use filbert trees.
Really?
I never heard that.
Filbert trees would work.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's an opportunity, potentially an opportunity for dual cropping for the hazelnuts as well.
Now, why filbert and an oak? Is it because they're hardwoods?
Yeah, exactly that. It's actually for two reasons. One, because they're hardwoods, but also because when you look at the biology of the root system, there's only a handful of trees that can form this association with the truffle and form it to such a scale that the tree will produce the fruits. And oak and hazel are just two of the ones which do this really well, you know, which can form this association and hold on to it really quite well. So that's why we use them.
But is there any comparison, or is it a totally separate biological system whereby, like peas or something, legumes, they're nitrogen fixing, and they mm-hmm. will benefit other plants? It's not like that sort of thing of nitrogen fixing. You're saying that the truffle helps the tree with uptake of sugar and water?
It is actually quite similar. That's a good bit of biological knowledge, actually. The pea, when it forms that association, that's a bacteria which goes into the root system of the pea. The fungus one is different, the truffle one, because it stays on the outside of the tree root. It never actually penetrates the cells of the tree, but it does give the tree nitrogen and phosphorus and various other trace elements. And then the tree, through photosynthesizing and getting all the energy from the sun, it sends the sugars to the truffle. Because for the truffle, the one thing it can't get is sugar. It needs the sugar from the tree.
Because it's below ground and it doesn't do any photosynthesis.
Exactly that. And it's the truffle, the roots, if you like, of the truffle, which we call mycelium, are very fine threads, and they're smaller than the roots of the tree, so they can access more nutrients than the tree could access on its own, which is why it helps the tree.
I've had shavings of truffle, and I've been to Urbani in Umbria. But, oh, boy, that was a hard ride to get there with all the motion sickness and the windy roads. But what is the truffle, is it mainly water? I would imagine a little bit of fiber and mainly water. What are the nutrients of a truffle?
That's a good question, actually, and it's I have to hold my hands up, and that's one aspect of truffle biology and truffle research that we've not actually pursued. But what I can tell you is the truffle, it actually has quite a high protein content.
Really?
It is mostly water, so you've got probably, I would guesstimate, something like 85 to 90% water content.
Okay.
But once all that's gone, you've got quite high protein content, and there's various nutrients which are very good for you in there, and also, of course, a little bit of carbon. But to be honest, it's one area that I'm not really an expert on, so...
When you're going to be you're going to be the lead scientist, as I understand, at the Napa Truffle Festival, December 10th through the 12th, what are you going to be discussing with the participants? You're going to be talking about cultivation in the effort of maybe motivating other people to take on the challenge of cultivation, or...
Absolutely. We're going to talk about two things, really. One is, at Mycorrhizal Systems, we work with landowners and farmers in a partnership approach. This means is that every plantation we set up is a site where we can collect data from. And so we can collate a lot of weather data. We monitor the tree roots every year so we can see what's happening with the truffle. And because of this, from an academic point of view, it gets very exciting because we generated huge amounts of data which are allowing us to see further than many other scientists in the field. So at the conference, we're going to be sharing some of the fruits of that data, which is going to be quite exciting, and also talking about how these kind of data sets are helping us to grow truffles and helping us in our understanding. So it's really going to be, you know, it's going to be of real interest to anyone who's interested in the cultivation side. It's we're really on the forefront here, and that's what really, really makes it exciting.
And in fact, I want to say, so Robert Sinsky Vineyards is already one of your partners?
Yeah, that's where we're running the orchard tour. So that's just a young orchard, a young truffle orchard. But that, as the conference evolves, you know, as we come back year after year, participants will get to come back and see those trees grow and see things develop, and then see us harvest our first truffles, which would be good fun.
Paul, what is your favorite? Do you have a favorite wine and truffle combination?
I definitely have favorite truffles. I'm not too good with my wines, but most of the time, just wine and truffles are the perfect pairing. But most of them.
Well, some two things that you love together, it works.
Absolutely that.
Dr. Paul Thomas, partner and chief scientist for the American Truffle Company and managing director of Mycorrhizal Systems Limited in the United Kingdom. Thank you very, very much. And I hope you have a wonderful visit in Napa December 10th through the 12th.
Thank you.
We will have links up for you to learn more. You're listening to Wine and Dine. You're listening to iWine Radio.
Hi, this is Ken Frank from La Toque Restaurant in Napa. I'm going to be hosting the Napa Truffle Festival in the month of December. You can find more information at NapaTruffleFestival.com on the web.
My name is Lynn Creelo-Chamberlain, host of Wine and Dine.
December 10th through the 12th, the Napa Truffle Festival presented by Lexus will be the first of its kind. World-class cuisine meets cutting-edge truffle science. Black truffles, cultivation, culinary programs, leading truffle scientists, Michelin star chefs, fabulous food and wine pairings, a truffle orchard excursion, and Epicurean Marketplace. And I wish I could be there. Joining us today on Wine and Dine is Michelin star chef Ken Frank of La Toque, who is in charge of the multi-course truffle menu, with each course prepared by a Michelin chef with wine tasting. And Ken, thank you so very much for joining us today. Who was behind this whole Napa Truffle Festival to begin with? Was this your idea?
No, I've been doing a truffle menu. This year, actually, in January, we'll debut our 29th annual all-black truffle menu.
Wow.
But this truffle festival was conceived by Robert Chang from the American Truffle Company. He is one of the principals in this company that is becoming quite successful at cultivating two kinds of truffles all over the world, actually. There's some European truffle scientists. They have truffles cultivating in the northern and southern hemisphere. They're beginning to really perfect the process, and it's becoming very exciting. And of course, you know, cultivating truffles is very, very difficult.
And
but at $1,000 a pound, there's a lot of incentive.
Oh my gosh, yes! But this is nothing like nowadays. There are so many people that can buy a kit for growing shiitake mushrooms or oyster mushrooms, you know, at their basement or whatever. It's nothing like that.
Oh no! It takes years and years, and you can't just grow truffles where you want to grow. I mean, you can grow them where you want to grow them if you do everything right, but at the end of the day, they grow underground. They grow where they want to grow, and you still have to go out with your dog or your pig, and you still have to find them and dig them up.
Oh my gosh! So I understand that the orchard is going to be at Robert Sinsky Vineyards, I think.
That's correct. Robert Sinsky, of course, famous for their wines here in Napa Valley, has dedicated a piece of their property in the Carneros district to plant a truffle orchard, which they have now started. And it will be a few more years before even a few experimental truffles come out of it. But it's the right spot, it's the right soil, it's the right climate. They've got some very advanced truffle science technology, because ultimately it's Mother Nature that produces the truffles. If you make everything else right, Mother Nature will take care of the rest.
I visited Urban.
Urbani,
near Orvieto a number of years ago, and there was one man on the tour I was with that was absolutely fanatical. He was fanatical about truffles, especially white truffles. I didn't really get it. Explain to us, what are truffles? Why do people go wild, absolutely wild over truffles?
Well, the reason people go wild over truffles is ultimately the same reason that pigs go wild over truffles. And the reason that we have found truffles to begin with was because, you know, ancestors very long ago noticed that female pigs would dig them up and eat them, and that's undoubtedly how the first man found that truffles were edible and ate them and thought, wow, this is good. You know, they have a very intoxicating aroma. White truffles have a particularly strong aroma, and they're the most expensive and they're the rarest, and they have not yet been successfully cultivated. So some people jump to the conclusion that they're the best. But
yeah,
the black winter truffle is also, there are two really highly regarded special truffles, the white and the true black. And then there's a third that is very good that is either referred to as the summer truffle or the burgundy truffle. And both the winter black truffle and the burgundy truffle have now been successfully cultivated. But by cultivating, it's not like you just plant them and water them and let them grow. Because the truffles grow in a symbiotic relationship with the root systems of the tree that is their host. They're fungus, but they're not a true mushroom. They're a tuber. So they grow underground. And the same way that the mushroom that you see sprouting above ground is ultimately just the fruiting body of a much larger organism, the truffle that we shave on top of pasta and use in cooking is the fruiting body of the truffle organism, which is called a mycelium. So there's a network of fungus growing underground in a symbiotic relationship with the tree. And once a year, it produces fruit, which has spores in it. These would ideally be dug up by animals and then spread by the animals would eat them, and of course, I don't need to tell you how that would spread later, but later the animal would take it to a different location and, shall we say, deposit those spores in potentially a new home.
Okay.
And so that's how truffles operate. In old days, they always used pigs to find truffles because the female pig is excited by and attracted to one of the aromatic compounds that is produced by the truffle.
Okay.
And in fact, the truffle scent mimics a pheromone that is secreted by male pigs. So male boars secrete this, and it gets the female boars excited. And again, I don't need to go into details, but it gets them all excited, and that probably has something to do with why we get so excited about it, too.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. So how does the dog fit into this? It's just because the dogs have a good sense of smell.
Oh, it's simply because, well, one, there's a reason, just for practical, dogs have fantastic noses.
Yes.
As anyone who's ever tried to smuggle anything has found out. And dogs can be easily trained, and dogs love to please. So if you have your choice of putting a 300-pound sow on the back of your little Fiat and heading up into the foothills in Italy, or putting a 15-pound little terrier mutt in your car and heading up into the foothills.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's hard to get the pig in the back of the Fiat.
Yeah.
And the rest of the year, when the pig's not hunting truffles, you got to feed it, and it's big. And the rest of the year, the dog's your pet.
When
the pig finds the truffle, if a 350-pound sow decides that she wants the truffle and you're not going to have it, well, then you have to resolve that dispute. And the dog is simply, you know, thanked with a milk bone, and he moves on to find another truffle and please his master.
So talk to us about this, the Michelin star truffle dinner. And I know that I'm going to be talking to your wine director, Scott Tracy, about the champagne brunch. Give us the lowdown or an outline, so to speak, on the truffle dinner. And I would imagine it's going to be fascinating, not just from a food perspective, but for me, a wine and truffle perspective.
We have lots of fun planned for dinner. Of course, to me, the real high point of this is the dinner on Saturday night. There's some organized dinners on Friday night, but Saturday night in my kitchen at Latoque, I'm hosting a number of friends of mine, all of whom have multiple Michelin stars. Between us, I believe there's 13 stars total spread between the six of us. So I'm starting the menu out, and I'm doing a soft farm egg with burgundy truffle and truffle toast. Egg is one of my favorite vehicles for truffle flavor. It's just fantastic. And then Sylvain Porte, who is the right hand of Alain Ducasse, is going to be doing a fresh black truffle salad with fleur de sel, foie gras, and a celery remoulade.
Oh, my.
David Kinch from Manresa, down in the South Bay, with two Michelin stars, is going to be doing spot prawns in their own souks, which means their own juices, rolled in chopped truffle. And then Josiah Citron from Melisse in Santa Monica, with his two Michelin stars, is going to be doing a cod with salsify, melting onions, and a brown butter truffle sauce. Gabriel Kruther, my friend who's the chef at the Modern in New York, did a great James Beard dinner with us here a few years ago, is coming out. And he's going to do a duck pot au feu in a black truffle nage. And then Nancy Oakes from Boulevard in San Francisco is doing a zabuton, which is it's a Japanese name for the cut of beef that we would know as the boneless shoulder short rib. It's a richly marbled piece of meat, and she's going to serve that with a risotto and some roasted red beets, truffles, and beef jus. So we'll be using both the black winter truffles, Tuber melanosporum, and Tuber uncinatum, which is the burgundy truffle, and it promises to be quite the decadent feast.
This isn't just for you guys cooking for each other. This is open for people who want to buy a seat.
Oh, we have 80 seats available for this truffle dinner.
Okay.
But there's some truffle cooking classes up at the CIA. There's a gourmet lunch at the CIA. There's some science-based seminars here at the Westin in Napa.
Yes.
On truffle cultivation, there's a truffle orchard tour, and between the science-based seminar in the morning and the tour in the afternoon, I'll be preparing a truffle lunch on Saturday. And then there's a seminar on the proprietary science that the American Truffle Company uses. And then Sunday, we're doing a champagne truffle brunch, and people will have truffle omelets before they go home, and it should be really quite a decadent weekend of truffle goodness.
And then wines to go with this as well, and I suppose I will ask Scott Tracy big time for this information, but are any champagnes going to be poured?
We will pour some champagne.
Burgundy?
With the amuse-bouche. We will certainly get into some earthy burgundy or Barolo-type wine.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be quite the party.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I would think also maybe an Amarone would be, that they he would you know be choosing that as well.
Maybe with the last course.
Oh, my gosh. Chef Ken Frank of La Toque, thank you so very much for joining us today on Wine & Dine.
Pleasure to be here.
You're listening to iWine Radio.
Hello, my name is Scott Tracy. I'm the wine director at La Toque Restaurant. It's my job to pour great wine into your glass, and I look forward to doing so.
My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host of Wine & Dine.
If you're participating in the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival, then you perhaps will be involved in a champagne brunch on Sunday, December 12th, or perhaps on Saturday you will be part of the truffle dinner menu that Scott Tracy has put together the wine selection for. Scott Tracy is the wine director for La Toque restaurant in Napa. And I have in front of me the dinner menu draft. This is not a final. It's still, I'm sure, a work in progress. The truffles with wine choices. And this, I would imagine, Scott, that in a comment you said before we started recording, that pairing wines with whatever, it's a very academic exercise.
Well, it is until the food is presented to you. You can have the philosophy and the science, and you're comfortable with your superior guests. But until you taste the food, then you really are not quite as sure whether you have a winner or whether you have to start over. The sequence of the flavors, the importance of the sauce. When you're reading a description like a menu and you say, oh, prawns with such and such or truffles with egg, and you think, what's the dominant flavor? Until you taste the dish itself, the dominant flavor may not really reveal itself in terms of its its combination and how it's going to interact with the wine.
Yeah.
So we love to think that we've got a good grasp on things, but chefs are very creative and produce is seasonal. Something as magical as a truffle is so aromatic that we know that that's going to be a very dominant flavor. And that's the reason that people come to celebrate their lives and enjoy the luxury of truffles. We know that it's mostly going to be about that magical aromatic.
I've tasted truffles a few times in my life, but I by no means have really that much experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's just, it's almost like, it's more than an addiction, it's a passion. And I would, can you get across to people how exciting truffle is, perhaps because of the aromatic diversity and the challenge of the interplay with wine?
Well, I love the question. Let me try. I would place a truffle in a category almost in alone, in the sense that once you realize the glory of the truffle, you can't go back and forget that you haven't had it and don't want it again as soon as possible. Part of the celebration of it is that it's in limited supply. It's very much an agricultural product that might be different year to year. So when you have a truffle that is so aromatic and it just transports you, you are not in a restaurant. You're not. You're suddenly you're in France. You're in a forest. You have this aroma of place, and a great wine can do that as well. In a way that if you're tasting a wine that's exceptional, you're tasting 1974 Martha's Vineyard Cabernet from Napa, or you're tasting 96 Latoche, that's an experience that transports you because you're breathing in these magical flavors that makes you forget everything that's happening in your life other than this moment that's so sensuous and so evocative that you think, this is it. So
I like your use of the word sensuous. And you're right. Mm-hmm. And you're very much, you don't have a choice. You're very much in the moment.
Well, truffles do that. That's the whole point of it, really, is that there's an aspect to it where you'll take a bite of the dish and you just close your eyes because you don't want to be focused on anything else other than the beauty of the flavors that are being produced and experienced.
Is there, I know that you said that truffles in a category by itself, but for many people listening to this, they've had a portobello before, or a shiitake mm-hmm. before, or an oyster mushroom before, chanterelle. Can you draw any comparison or contrast to other mushrooms?
Well, certainly you have some similarities in terms of texture and how you would use them in the process of cooking, so that you want to highlight a beautiful mushroom. You don't want to overpower it. Certainly, so if you're cooking with truffles, you want to use a certain amount of dairy to bring that forward so that the aroma is so forward that you're not disguising it with a lot of acidity or a lot of tomatoes. So it's not simply making a pasta and throwing it into a sauce, that you understand that that's at the very top of the pyramid and everything else is below it. So everything that you're creating for that dish is to acknowledge that the truffle is the reason why we are having this special dinner. So that everything else needs to support the flavors of the truffle, not be disguised in a sauce, not be disguised by stronger flavors, because the flavor of the truffle is so specific that you really want to embrace that.
So you're saying the dairy is the carrier. It's the UPS that's delivering.
Well, it's exactly in the sense that what you're looking for is a mechanism that allows it as a texture that has richness, but it's relatively neutral.
Okay.
As opposed to something that's going to be overpowering. So it highlights the creaminess of it. The creaminess of, say, a butter sauce allows you to the truffle to be transporting in terms of its aromatics.
Oh, and so a truffle in your mouth is soft and smooth?
Well, no, you'll you know, there's some texture to truffle. I mean, but your reason you're slicing it so thin that you want to maximize the aromatic of it, not that you want to maximize the texture of it.
You want to maximize the surface area because then you have more. Okay.
Then you have more aroma because that's what makes it special.
So what are you?
And that's what makes it so addictive. That's why dogs are preferred over pigs because the pigs don't want to give it up. The pigs say, "Look, this is. I found it. You can't have this. I want this." And there's an aspect to seeing people when you have six people at a table and suddenly they all have truffles at the same time, and it's just the smell just envelops for a space around them and just makes it for such an exciting moment.
What kind of wine are you pairing for the Saturday, December 11th truffle dinner? And I understand that Ken Frank is tentatively going to be creating soft farm egg with Burgundy truffle and truffle toast.
Right. We tend to start, and again, egg lends itself very much to dairy, and when you're storing truffles, you generally store them in a container with rice or with eggs.
Okay.
And then the aromas of the truffle permeate the flavor, so then you can make a special risotto, or you'll make a special presentation of egg, and the truffle has absorbed itself through the shell into the egg.
Wow.
And so something as simple as an egg itself becomes far more profound with the inclusion of truffles.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Oh, it's really quite a surprise to what degree the aromas of truffle can change many things. So for our purposes, we're looking at egg. We have a little bit of butter. We're probably thinking about a champagne there.
And what kind of a champagne? Because you say that you don't want the high acidity, but I would imagine you want some kind of a contrast over the richness of the egg and the butter.
Well, you want to embrace that, and so if you were, you probably would like a champagne that's a little creamier.
Yes.
So something like a Blanc de Blanc that's going to have a little more texture. The more you're going in the other direction, you're going later into the meal, where then you're using the truffle more as a mushroom.
Okay.
Then the more you might want. If you were doing champagne, you'd do a Blanc de Noir, or you want a Burgundy, or you want a Barolo, because those are more mushroomy and earthy in that sense. The tête de cuvées of champagne will have a little terroir to them, which will correspond beautifully to the terroir of the truffle. But what you want to embrace is that creaminess, and you also have an aspect to beautiful champagne that has that rich, almost yeasty smell, and so that's going to be magical with the inclusion of the toast. And there's a tendency for that sort of umami characteristic that truffles have, that egg has, that things that are fermented, things like yeast, things that are going to work very well together in that aspect of the science. So we do like a rich textured champagne rather than something that's simply bone dry. You pop a bottle of champagne, the sound is the same.
Yes.
You taste a great champagne, that's when you're tasting the richness and the complexity and the sense of place. So taste is so important when you're moving up the ladder in champagne, and then you start to realize at some point it's not just a celebration, at some point it is a profound wine as well.
Yes.
But we do have that other connection, of course, where a champagne is a luxury and a truffle is a luxury.
Yes.
And there is an emotion involved in bringing two luxurious items together as well that cannot be understated.
So this is with the Saturday Michelin star truffle dinner menu.
Right.
What are you doing with the champagne brunch on, I understand that's Sunday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what we, I'm less clear on what the dishes are, but again, I think staying with the concept of dairy, of butter and richness,
and
egg, that we're staying with champagne.
Okay.
Because I don't have the menu in front of me, my philosophy is that it's a different type of pairing in the sense that the more you have a variety of flavors, then you're pairing wine to a variety of dishes.
Yes.
If you're pairing wine to a single dish, you're looking for that dominant flavor and that singular focus. So it's a different philosophy to make that decision about what wine's going to work with what dish.
That makes total sense.
As opposed to a wine working with a series of dishes.
Yeah, makes total sense. Scott Tracy, wine director for La Toque, one of the major, major determining factors of what you're going to be eating and drinking at the Napa Truffle Festival. Thank you very much for joining us today on Wine and Dine.
Absolutely.
We will have links up for you to learn more. You're listening to iWine Radio.
Hello, my name is Robert Chang. I'm the managing director of the American Truffle Company and the director of the Napa Truffle Festival. You can find out more about the American Truffle Company at americantruffle.com. You can find out more about the Napa Truffle Festival at napatrufflefestival.com.
My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host of Wine and Dine.
December 10th through the 12th, the American Truffle Company will present the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival. Gee, I wish I was on the West Coast. This really sounds like a wonderful opportunity to learn about truffles. Featuring a unique combination of leading truffle cultivation experts and scientists, along with internationally renowned Michelin star chefs. The focus is primarily black truffles, specifically tuber melanosporum, which is the winter or Perigord truffle, and tuber estivum, which is the summer or Burgundy truffle, which will be examined, discussed, probed, prepared, demonstrated, and finally paired with wines and feasted upon. Joining us today is the founder and managing director of the American Truffle Company, who is also the event director. It's his brainchild, the Napa Truffle Festival, Robert Chang. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Lynn, for the opportunity.
Give people a heads up about this. The American Truffle Company was your idea to learn how to reproduce in some way what Mother Nature does for actually cultivation. Is that it?
That's exactly right, Lynn. The American Truffle Company focuses on applying rigorous science to cultivating truffles in a variety of climates and soil conditions.
Talk to us about this upcoming event in Napa, December 10th through the 12th. The opening evening, is there going to be a series of dinners, right, at various restaurants?
That is right. This very exciting festival will kick off with trips to local restaurants in the Napa area, and we have five very, very exciting restaurants lined up for the evening, and so the idea is guests will have an opportunity to taste truffle tasting menus at each of these restaurants, and that's an opportunity for these local restaurants to showcase their cuisine and the opportunity for guests to see and experience the diverse culinary repertoire that the region has to offer.
What year did you found the American Truffle Company?
The American Truffle Company was founded in 2007.
So what's going on in my mind is that I'm assuming that the popularity of truffles is growing significantly for you to put together this sort of enormous effort. You must be really be an entrepreneur and a scientist at heart.
You're absolutely right, Lynn. We're seeing just an explosion in terms of the interest, both on the truffle cultivation side as well as the truffle consumption side. As an objective measure, the search that's carried out on Google for truffle cultivation just in the last couple of years having as much as five or six times the searches just compared to 3 or 4 years ago. So we're definitely seeing a big explosion in terms of the interest on truffles.
And as I understand it, you are cultivating truffles not only in the United States but outside of the United States.
That's right. The American Truffle Company, in fact, covers the entire North America, so Canada, the United States, as well as we're beginning to get interest from Mexico as well. But aside from that, in addition, the American Truffle Company actually is part of a broader global enterprise that has supplied the technology and the scientific methodology to growing truffles in 15 countries around the globe.
Wow. What is the website that people can learn more about the American Truffle Company and for people who would like to participate in the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival?
The American Truffle Company has a very comprehensive website that talks about what we do and the science of truffle cultivation, and people can find that at www.americantruffle.com. And on the Truffle Festival side, you can find more information, including the various packages, the types of chefs and the scientists that will be coming to the festival at www.napatrufflefestival.com.
Why do you, I do not know the history behind, and I would bet you do, why are certain chocolate bonbons called truffles? So many Americans probably do not realize that a truffle is, they think it's a chocolate treat instead of this very, very special mushroom.
That's right, Lynn. And very often I tell people that I help people grow truffles. And the first reaction is, oh, I didn't know truffles, chocolate truffles grew on trees.
Oh, my gosh.
But coming back to your question, why are some chocolate truffles called truffles? Well, that's because in the early days when chocolates were made into this type of shape, it really resembled the natural truffle, and hence the word truffle.
Okay, that's what I thought. So describe to us, what does a truffle smell like? What does it look like? And what does it feel like in your mouth? Because probably many, many people have never experienced a truffle, because it's not something you could just go to the grocery store and purchase.
That's right. It is an incredibly unique delicacy that it has a very, very complex set of flavors. It's think of a glass of good wine, or a glass of very good Merlot, for example. It's a complex set of flavors and aroma, and that's very, very much the case with truffles. And in fact, some of the words I have been used to explain the aroma of truffles, including garlicky, earthy, and in some cases, it's even somewhat pungent. So and the flavor and the aroma of truffles, in fact, varies from season to season.
Okay, and from soil profile also.
Not so much from soil profile,
okay.
In fact, from the same spot, the same tree can produce truffles that have slightly different flavors.
Wow.
So it's all nature's way of coming up with something that's as unique as every individual truffle.
Before we run out of time, I would like to find out why truffle. Why are you so fascinated with truffles? Was this something that was introduced to you as a child or something? Where's the connection come from?
Very good question, Lynn. I actually spent about 2 years in Europe, and I had my first experience with truffles in an Italian bistro in the middle of Munich, and I immediately fell in love and got hooked. And so coming back to the States, I realized that, I've always been a foodie all my life, and this is something that could be cultivated, but requires significant science behind it. So coming from a scientific background, that was the perfect thing for me to do.
Robert Chang, you are giving the world this wonderful gift, and particularly in the United States with the American Truffle Company. And I can't wait to hear the wonderful experiences people that are going to be joining you at the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival, December 10th through the 12th. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Lynn, and I hope to see everybody there.
You're listening to iWine Radio.
Hi, my name is Doug Duda. I'm the creator and host of The Well-Seasoned Traveler on A&E International Television and the founding executive director of Astor Center in New York City. You can find out more about Astor Center at astorcenternyc.com.
Welcome to Wine and Dine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain. You know, if you meet one person in the wine and food industry, one person leads to another person, and such is the case here today. Doug Duda is the keynote speaker at the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival, December 10th through the 12th. Because this is really, really cool stuff that first time ever. And anybody who is a serious foodie or you're a chef, you definitely want to be in Napa for this weekend. Doug Duda's bio is unbelievable, quite truly. And it's amazing how many people that start their career in law end up moving into the culinary field. He is the founding executive director of Astor Center, a state-of-the-art food and beverage education and event space in New York City. He is the creator and host of A&E International television series, The Well-Seasoned Traveler. He received his law degree at Boston U and an MBA at Harvard Business School. And he is president-elect for the 2013 year of the International Association of Culinary Professionals. Doug, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Well, I'm happy. I'm exhausted hearing how many things I'm involved in.
Oh, my gosh. When you were growing, are you an East Coast guy? Were you always living in the East Coast?
The family is all from the Midwest.
Midwest. Okay. Was your mother a foodie or your grandmother? Did you grow up in a kitchen where there was always some kind of cooking going on? Or where did you develop your passion for food?
Well, my mother would laugh because she was the first, and my father, the first in their families, immigrant families, to go to college.
Oh.
And so they were slipping the surly bonds of domestic requirements and that tedious fate. And so my mother didn't know how to cook a thing when she got
really?
Married.
Really? Oh, my gosh. What a riot.
Yeah. And on both sides of the family, we had... You know, everything that that so many immigrants did when they came to this country, farmers and butchers and caterers and winemakers and, you know, you name it. If the customers didn't come, at least the family never starved.
What is your immigrant nationality from your family? What country did they come from?
Well, my mother is Swiss and my father is Polish. And Duda is a Polish name that I had always assumed when I was a kid and never... Growing up in Prairie Village, Kansas, and not around a lot of Polish kids.
Yes.
I always assumed it was short for Dudakowski or something, longer that disappeared at Ellis Island. But as it turns out, years later, a friend of mine showed me a picture of a Duda on a stamp that she'd received from a friend from Poland.
Oh, wow.
And I said, you have a picture of a Duda? And I cringe because whenever I'm introduced to people in different countries, Duda is usually a word that pops up somewhere in their vocabulary, and it's everything from, something esteemed to, the kind of the village idiot. So I didn't know what to think, but a Duda is a bagpipe, and it's the Polish version of the bagpipe, and it is, so that somewhere along the line there are itinerant musicians in the family.
Oh, my gosh, what a fantastic story. I love, love, love the bagpipe.
Yeah, me too. It explains why, as a kid, and not having come from Scotland and not having known that there were bagpipes anywhere else, the hair always stood up on the back of my neck whenever I heard bagpipe music, in the Macy's parade on television or whatever. And so the mystery was solved.
What are you going to talk about as the keynote speaker at the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival? What is your game plan? Are you going to be what kind of pearly wisdom or secrets are you going to share?
Well, I think that there are a lot of people who have tasted truffles, and they know what they are, and they know what they should taste like. And then there are the rest of us. I know that you know, until the time I first went on a truffle hunt in the south of France about 10 years ago, I'd had truffled salad dressing and I'd had truffled mashed potatoes and, you know, but a lot of this, you know, kind of amounts to somebody waving a truffle over the over the,
exactly.
The item that was being prepared.
Yes.
And you're left to, you know, to wonder, have you really had the taste of truffles?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Have you really had that experience? And, you know, of course, the television show that the Well-Seasoned Traveler is really all about going back to the countries where foods come from and being able to satisfy the, you know, the answer to that question. Is that what it really tastes like, where it comes from?
Right.
But, and, you know, I think that that's something that people enjoy hearing about. They want to know how to separate the wheat from the chaff, how to get the true taste of truffle when they're ordering truffles in restaurants, what to order and what not to order, where they're buying it. Should I buy the truffle oil? Does that
okay.
All those things.
Right. Yeah, because it's been amazing to me over the last 5 years, 3 years, that sort of truffle oil is something that you can get in a lot of grocery stores, upscale grocery stores. But that sort of thing wasn't even available 10, 20 years ago. It was unheard of in the United States.
That's right. I still remember when Julia Child died, so many people who knew her or touched the hem of the garment in some way got phone calls to talk about how she changed the world of food. And I used to work in Legal Seafoods, the original Legal Seafoods in Cambridge, Massachusetts, when she and Paul used to come in and, you know, she would she'd come in and ask about every last thing in the case and then, you know, talk about, well, when I was in France, and then on a Friday afternoon in a Catholic neighborhood, there was 20 people waiting to strangle her just to get her out of the way to get their fish and get home.
Oh, my gosh.
But anyway, you know, food stories are, you know, kind of in the blood. And
yeah. Are you going to be participating in the whole weekend, December 10th through 11th, or are you going to be speaking and then getting on a plane going back to the East Coast?
I am going to be there for the whole weekend. I wouldn't miss
okay.
it.
Okay. What is the one, is there one event that you're particularly looking forward to more than another to learn something new?
Well, it's exciting because there are really, you know, kind of two tracks to this. There's, you know, what you do just as a food lover, and then there's an awful lot to learn there if, you know, what's on your mind is the science of it and how to do it and how to get started in propagating truffles. So I think that there's, you know, this is going to be one of those kind of deals that you can, you know, kind of go with the artist or the scientist in you, but I'm, you know, looking forward to the 13 Michelin star truffle dinner.
Yes.
That's going to be quite the thing.
Oh, do you have, I have a, boy, somewhere on my list of papers here, I have a list of all the different menus, the draft of the menus. Do you know which menu you're going to be going for? Or are you going to be kind of like restaurant hopping? Or are you allowed to do that?
I don't know whether or not this is going to be the case for everyone, but you know, I always tell people, if you really want to eat well when you travel, just hire somebody. If you don't have somebody, hire somebody to walk behind you with a camera on their shoulder, because then everybody invites you to taste all of their food, and they want you.
Oh,
want
that's you, a fantastic idea!
Want you to do everything and take you down to the basement where they keep a special bottle where only
yes.
family comes, and
yes.
when someone gets married, and so I think that is one of the joys of doing a television show is getting a chance to really taste a lot of different things.
Well, are you going to be actually filming for the Well-Seasoned Traveler at the Napa Truffle Festival?
No, we won't be filming. This will be total enjoyment
okay.
and a chance to also talk and answer questions. I do feel like kind of a walking guide to the perplexed for some of these topics. I've had a lot of people come up to me over the years and thank me for helping them understand how to eat sushi or one thing or another. So I think that's always part of the fun of this.
Oh, my gosh. That is a very good walking guide for the perplexed. I like that. Of all the places you've traveled and worked around the world, do you have a favorite?
Well, you know, on one level, it's always the most recent place you've been, but I would say that one place that continues to give me enjoyment is the kind of northwest section of Spain. I went to San Sebastian and filmed an episode the well-seasoned traveler there and made a lot of friends who are part of what has become a kind of Spanish culinary revolution.
Yes.
And now you see that kind of playing out in kitchens throughout the world and in various kinds of cuisines. Doesn't have to be Spanish. And so it's always a kind of a font of inspiration to me. And of course, the thing that's great about what they're doing is that they're looking for creative ways to present the true tastes
yes.
of their areas instead of, foreign tastes.
So yes.
It's all about authenticity.
Yes. Integrity in food, authenticity, and almost like terroir in food.
Yeah.
Well, Doug,
tasting the real thing,
and you will, in fact, be doing that as a participant and the keynote speaker at the inaugural Napa Truffle Festival. Thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. I look forward to seeing you there.
We will have links up for you to learn more, and you are listening to Wine and Dine. iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine on the web at iWineRadio.com.